Oh, yeah, good. Fetch that down if someone wants to use that. Over the last couple of weeks, well, last week, does anyone remember what topic we covered?
Last
week. Yes. Yeah, that was it. That's just what I wanted. Thank you. So we met up over the week, all the three of us, and we've talked about that subject and stuff that goes around it, and we've tried to produce something that goes along with that word of being either an optimist, which is what you really want to be, or a pessimist, which is not what you want to be. We've took on board what my mum said about the 10 things that you should do in a morning. Think of 10 things that you're thankful to God or just in general of. I know all us three have woke up in the morning and tried to implement that sort of 10-point idea. We've also been including this morning as prayer for the countries that we've selected in the year in the earlier meeting we did, because of course there's a lot of issues now with them sort of countries, and there's a lot of places that are experiencing trouble. Yeah. So it's important that we do keep them countries up in prayer. And if you have forgotten which country you picked or selected, we have got a list, so it's not all lost. We're going to do a task first. I'll just do that one. Yeah, we're going to do a task first. Is that all right?
Yes.
Task first. It involves you writing a list. This list is not for us to test you or anything like that. It's just so that you can maybe look at what you know and think maybe I need to improve it slightly. So we're going to hand out some paper. We've got a little stack of it. You can throw it away afterwards if you want, or you can keep it, you can do what you want. And then we're going to tell you what we want to write on it. Okay? I hope everyone's got a pen, because if you haven't, we're in trouble.
Yeah, we following on from what Daniel says, we sat and prayed. We were definitely all together on thinking about trying to follow on something from last week about especially about speaking the confessions and what's inside comes out. And we did all come up with the fruit of the Spirit. I mean, it's something that we all say. But just on your piece of paper now, just for a minute, can you list the 9 fruits of the Spirit? All 9. Just don't look at anything. That's cheating. Just off the top of your head, can you list them? Just take a minute for it.
Have we done them?
Does everybody, anybody need a little bit more time thinking? Right, we've got the full list here. I'll just read them out to you. Love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I mean, we don't want you to know how many you got or anything, but just think to yourself, did you actually know that? How many did you know?
I got 10.
That's interesting. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, we just what we're going to just do now is we're going to just explore a little bit what each of them means and sort of is, and what you can say all these and you think you know what they mean, but what is the real meaning to them? So I mean, let's start with love. So, the Greek word for love is agape. I mean, that agape is unconditional love, which is, it's what love is. It's true love. I mean, when the world talks about love, they talk about a very weak kind of love. Something it's very, a lot of love that's talked about in the world is just so conditional, you know. I will love you as long as you do this, you know. It's not whether somebody, you know, I love you because I need you. It's not you need somebody because you love someone. It's this, that kind of. In Strong's Concordance, the definition of what it says is agape is a word to which Christianity gave a new meaning outside of the New Testament. It rarely occurs in the existing Greek manuscripts of the period. Agape denotes an undefeatable benevolence, an unconquerable goodwill that always seeks the highest of the other. No matter what he does, it is the self-giving love that gives freely without asking anything in return. It does not consider the worth of its object. Agape is more a love by choice than Phyllis, which I remember quite a while ago you did something on agape and Phyllis love. I do remember that, and the Phyllis love is the wishy-washy, just, you know, like I said, you know, which, I mean, it says it, which is love by chance, and it refers to the will rather than the emotion. Agape describes the unconditional love God has for the world. In 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4-8, Paul describes the attributes of this love. Love endures long and is patient and kind. Love never is envious nor boils over with jealousy. It is not boastful or vainglorious. It does not display itself haughtily. It is not conceited, arrogant, inflated with pride. It is not rude or unmannerly. It does not act unbecoming. Love, agape love, God's love in us, does not insist on its own right or its own way, for it is not self-seeking. It is not touchy, fretful, resentful, and it takes no account of the evil done to it. It pays no attention to the sufferer taken. It does not rejoice at injustice and unrighteousness, but rejoices when right and truth prevail. Love bears up under anything and everything that comes. It is ever ready to believe the best of every person. It hopes are fadeless under any circumstances. It endures everything and anything without weakening. This love will never fail, become obsolete, or come to an end. I think that this is from the Amplified, which I love that passage. Cause, I mean, sometimes when it's just put from it, like the Amplified version of this it just covers everything so well. You can understand it so much better. What did you do next one?
There we are. Well, I'm doing the faithfulness, so that's the act of being faithful to someone. So that is sort of I got the definition as being loyal and constant to someone or like something. So we need to be faithful in all we do as Christians. So faithful in his prayer, we can't just say once and presume that that's enough. We need to be constant and carry on, and we need to be loyal to our friends in Christ. So I'd just like to tell a story about a lady from Thailand. And Grandma Torbo, a resident of Thailand, does not impress strangers. She is small of stature, bent with age, her hands and fingers gnarled with arthritis. She often stands quietly to one side. Her name, translated into English, means always. Despite her unimpressive physical appearance, Grandma always has inspired her missionary friends and Thai Christians by her faithfulness. A widow and over 90 years of age, she lives as a servant in a Thai home. Every Sunday she walks 2 miles to church. Out of her income of 5 cents a day, she regularly gives one day's wages to the Lord every week. When her missionary friends drive her home from church services, she gets out and bows her head in an audible prayer for the missionaries and the work of Christ in Thailand. One missionary says, "The thought of Grandma always faithfulness humbles and deepens us." And we should all try and be like Grandma always. We should always be faithful in everything we do, and do it in love as well. And we should as Christians, we should begin to be faithful in the small things. And we shouldn't just jump in. We should be faithful in his being constant with his prayer requests, as I've said. And we should be faithful to his family and church. And we should ask ourselves, if everyone were as faithful as I, what kind of church would this be? And William Barclay describes faithful, and it's the man on whose faithful services we may rely, on those on whose loyalty we may depend, whose word we can unreservedly accept. And we should try and be like that in everything we do, and be faithful. And Daniel.
Right, kindness. I think a lot of people see kindness as just being nice, so you're nice to someone. But really, it's not. Nice is defined in the dictionary as being agreeable, so you agree with somebody, you agree with what they're saying, what they're doing. But in contrast, kindness is acting for the good of people regardless of what they do. So you might not agree with what they actually do. You're not agreeable with what they're doing, but you're acting in kindness because you think, well, it's a totally different thing. If you're acting nice for somebody, you're basically you're doing it because you agree with what their cause is. So you might not say you meet a Muslim in the middle of town. You don't agree with them, but you might help them out still. You're not helping them because you're being nice. You don't agree with what they stand for, what religious background they may have. But at the same time, you're still helping. So you're being kind to them, which is a totally different thing. And I think that can be misunderstood. You can think you're being kind, but really you're just being nice because you think, actually, I'll help this person. They agree with what I'm saying. I like them because they're doing what I do or what I want to do. And in fairness, you might just see somebody and not help them out because you think, and you don't notice them. Okay. Right. Kindness is goodness of action, sweetness of disposition, gentleness in dealing with others. The word describes the ability to act for the welfare of those taxing your patience. So if somebody's trying your patience, like me and Luke quite often do with our parents, although we have got better, I must admit. We very rarely have arguments now. So that's a good thing. They still stick with us, and they still, even though we're trying them, they don't give up on us, and they'll still support us. I know a lot of families have situations where they might not agree with what the children are doing, but they're still supportive of them, and that's being kind. We're going to look at where the word kindness actually comes from. So in the Greek word is, I'm not sure how you say this properly, but we'll give it a go. Christos. There you go. It's like chase the ace, but no, sorry. This means show kindness or be friendly to others, and it was depicted with rulers. So a ruler would be kind to you, he'd spare your life, stuff like that. So it was often a word that only was associated, especially in like the Greek sort of, you know, historians and stuff, it only associated with somebody of high up rank in society could only bestow kindness on you, if you know what I mean. The definition in the Greek word was considered to be compassionate, considerate, sympathetic, humane, kind, or gentle. The Apostle Paul uses this word to depict God's incomprehensible kindness of people who are unsaved. If Paul noticed it, then it's evidently an important factor that we need to make sure we have the right understanding of. We don't want to think, oh, I'm being kind, but really we're not. We need to know what the definition is. It's all right trying to do something, but if you're doing it and you don't know what the actual definition is, it's like playing a sport. If you play a sport, you can get along all right, but if you know actual rules of it, then you're going to get a lot better. Okay. I found on the internet, randomly while searching around, like you do, that I can't remember the scholar's name, so you're going to have to let me off on this one. But he said that kindness for a believer is someone who seeks to become adaptable to the needs of those who are around him. So you're not necessarily... You're not necessarily doing it for yourself. It could be for the benefit of those around you. So yeah, it made more sense when I copied that down first time. I might follow it up later. So okay, so we'll move on to the next point. I think Jonathan's doing that.
Yes, it's joy. Joy. I suppose a lot of people, especially in the world, will just say, you say joy, think of being happy, happy clappy people. Joy is, it's not what it is at all. You know, so someone can be full of joy. You know, they don't necessarily have to be so happy and that, but they're still a joyful person. Joy is more than happiness. Happiness is temporal and conditional. Happiness is an emotion which is dependent on personal feelings. Joy is an unconditional state of mind that accompanies fellowship with God, which is characterized with great well-being. The Greek word for joy is chara, which is derived from charis, which is the Greek word for grace. This means, obviously, joy is not a human-based happiness that comes and goes. Joy is from a divine origin. It is spirit-given, which is a spirit-given expression that flourishes best in hard times. So it basically means that, you know, you don't have to be happy. You know, you can go through things. You're not happy about it. You're not happy about it. You know, we're going through hard times right now. We're not happy about it. But we're still filled with joy. That joy from God. That joy of that unwavering relationship. In Thessalonians 1:6, the Thessalonians were under great stress due to persecution. Yet in the midst of it all, they continued to experience great joy. In fact, the Greek strongly implies that the supernatural joy was due to the Holy Spirit working with them. Paul called it joy of the Holy Ghost. Nehemiah 8:10 says, "Do not sorrow, for the joy of the Lord is your strength."
Amen. Luke. Hello. I had this. I'm doing gentleness now, and it's defined. It's defined by the Greeks as having a humble and kind demeanor, which calms another's anger. And just to put that in context, for example, a king forgiving a servant, the king could have punished him. He could have done anything to him, but choose instead to show kindness and forgiveness. And a king would be praised for that. And we need to be much like that. We need to be able to discuss things without losing one's temper because of unkind or unfair remarks that we may not necessarily agree with, but we must still stay calm. And Aristotle says that the ability to bear reproach and slights with moderation, and not to embark on revenge quickly, and not to be easily provoked to anger, but to be free from bitterness and contentiousness, having tranquility and stability in the spirit. And there are a lot of references to gentleness in the Bible, but an example is Moses. As for example, the golden calf, and Moses could have just gone on a rant, but he showed gentleness, and his gentleness was a result of a humble opinion of himself, and but although this is not due to Moses' lack of strength, but due to his strength to stop himself from going on at him and having a rant at him. And we must have gentleness in our life a lot, as well, wherever we go. And we must be slow to anger, as the verse says. And this is a byproduct, is if we walk in the Spirit, we will be gentle. So that's mine done.
Patience. We all have to be patient at times. Yep, Auntie Helen's just full of patience. A thing with patience that I didn't realise when I looked through the definition was, you usually think about patience, you think, oh, you've got to wait a bit of time for it to happen. It's gonna happen, so you just wait. And that's a broad definition of it. But I think when I looked at the definition, it says that it's actually, when it goes back to the Greek words, it's broken up into two words. So you've got, I'm not going to bother saying the Greek words because they just get embarrassing. But we've got long suffering and endurance. So it's not actually waiting around. It might actually take something out of you. It's not going to be something where you just think, "Well, I can put up without it." I'm being patient. It's actually something that might affect you. So you might be waiting for a job to come, and till that job comes, you aren't going to have an income. So that's being patient, because you haven't got the income that you may need at that time. And so you're having to be patient and wait for that job. Instead of trying to push doors open, you're waiting. It's a long suffering at that point. That wasn't very good, but no, it's alright. Right. So the two parts that it's broken up to in the Greek word patience, the first bit comes from another, it's like it's a subword of another Greek word, if you understand me. The other word is makros, which means long, and it denotes forbearance, fortitude, patience, endurance, and long suffering. So yeah, it's it also denotes that you have to have some ill treatment or persecution because of the being patient. So you're not ending up well off it. Yeah, tribulation, work of faith. Yeah, very good. Why didn't I think of that one? yeah, it also describes a person who has the power to exercise revenge, but because you're being patient, you are restraining yourself, as it is, and not getting that revenge. Now the second part of the word is the endurance part. So there's long suffering and endurance as the two parts. Endurance, if you look that up in the dictionary, there's a number of like subwords that it can be like that are associated with it. As an athlete, you need to have endurance to keep running a race, and that's another example of what like a key Christian belief that as a Christian, you've got to keep running the race of life, not give up on life, and you've got to make sure you grab all of them important moments and make sure you make the most of them. And that you're prepared for them as well. As an athlete, you need to make sure that you don't just if you're a long distance runner, you might run the first 100 meters, well fast. But if you're no good after the first 100 meters, what's going to happen to you? You're going to in the end lose. So it's not much good that. Right. That's too complicated. I can't talk about that. Yeah. The definition went on to talk about being resistant to weariness and defeat. So even if you are feeling down, you feel like, oh, I've got nowhere to go. I can't be bothered anymore. I just want to go home to bed. You've got to get up, carry on, because soon enough along the line, something's going to come along that's going to encourage you. I know with cricket, when I play a cricket game, I'll be playing rubbish. It does happen. sorry. And then suddenly I'll play a game against maybe an average side, and I'll do really well. And that gives me a boost of confidence, and that confidence boost makes me want to go on, do more, play more. And that's what it's looking for. With patience, you've got to have a bit of long suffering, but suddenly you'll have something that'll give you a boot up the backside, and you think, actually, I can do this, I'm going to do well. And then you're going to continue. And that patience is going to pay off, because you've waited all that time, and suddenly it's paid off. What better thing? If you'd have not waited, what would have happened? Nothing would have happened. You'd have got nowhere, done nothing. So it's a key part of as definitely a Christian. It's a key part of the religion, and also your lifestyle. Things might not happen straight away. When you pray, you're not going to see stuff happen straight away. You're going to have to wait for stuff to happen. It's going to come around. It's going to happen. You've just got to keep praying, keep in there.
It's also waiting with the person.
Yeah, yeah, that's it, yeah. If you aren't well, you, just because stuff doesn't happen straight away, doesn't mean you're not going to get healed. You've not wasted your time by, I said all that time, did all that praying, and then suddenly I've got healed. That time that you spent doing it, it wasn't wasted. That contributed to you getting that healing. And so I think, yeah, patience is extremely important. Okay.
It's a preparation.
Yeah.
It's a preparation. Right. This is peace. Peace is not just staying calm in a situation. True peace is as the result of resting in a relationship with God. Peace is a tranquility, a state of rest that comes from seeking after God. It is the true opposite of chaos. The word peace comes from the Greek word eirene, which is the Greek equivalent of shalom, which expresses the full idea of wholeness, completeness, and tranquility within the soul that is unaffected by any outward circumstances or pressure. The word eirene strongly suggests the rule of order in a place of chaos. When a person is dominated by peace, he has a calm inner stability that results in the ability to conduct himself peacefully. Even in the midst of circumstances that would normally be nerve-wracking, traumatic, or upsetting, rather than allowing difficulties and pressures in life to break him, a person who is possessed by peace is whole, complete, orderly, stable, and poised for a blessing. Jesus describes as a Prince of Peace. He brings peace into the hearts of those who desire it. In John 14:27, it speaks saying, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives it, do I give it to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." Peace, true peace, is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of God, no matter what the conflict you're in.
I'm going to do self-control. I think out of all the fruits of the Spirit, many people find this one the hardest in his everyday life as well as being a Christian. And the Greek word is enkratia. It comes from the word strength and means one holding himself in. And this is such a necessary virtue, I think, because it encapsulates all the other fruits of the Spirit in with it, such as meekness, and it just is, and righteousness, and it's key in not just being a Christian, but in all walks of life. Like, we can go to the post office, and there might be a 5-50 person queue. We've got to control ourselves not to have a rant at the trainee at the desk. And self-control is only found 3 times in the New Testament. And where it is, the word follows righteousness and judgment. And Solomon says that it is easier to capture a city than to be in control of our spirit. So it's very difficult, and really we do really need to work and be able to control ourselves. And next page. And although it may be difficult, that with God's help, we can do all things. So, in times of tribulation, we can just go to Him, and He will help us in those, and He will also help us that we help us improve our self-control, help us develop it. And in conclusion, as one cooperates with God in the doing of his will, self-control will be a natural byproduct. We can't overestimate the importance of developing self-control in our lives. Without it, we can't defeat the temptations that come our way. Without it, we can't overcome the works of the flesh. We can't grow, and we can't bear the fruits of the Spirit.
Right, goodness is the final one I'm going to look at. When you look at goodness, you think, just being good. And so I thought, well, I've got to explore this one further. So we had a look in his really old dictionary. And when you actually read the words associated with goodness, you actually realise that a lot of the stuff in goodness links to a lot of the other things we've talked about anyway. And I think it's in the case of all the areas, they all link together. Without one of them, you're lacking a key ingredient, if you know what I mean. You've got to make sure that you're aware of all the fruits of the Spirit to make sure that they are effective in your life and to you as a Christian, so that people notice you. I mean, you could be impatient, but do everything else, and people will just not give you the time of day because they think, I'm not going to get anywhere with this person, and they're not going to be able to spend the time with me that I want to try and discuss matters that in maybe a week's time could result in them becoming a Christian. And I think that's essential. But anyway, we'll look at goodness. In this dictionary, it says it's a virtue. Now, that was a good start. Because virtues, we then looked that up as well. And that's something that you develop over a period of time. So it's not just going to happen straight away. I know, as a child, you grow up and you do things that are wrong. And your mum and dad correct you. Now, all these corrections that you get are all pointing towards this goodness, aiming to make sure that you've got the right virtues, and you've got the right points in your head, sort of points, like strongholds in your head that are going to make you who you are. Okay? What else did I say about that? Oh yeah, a virtue is a moral goodness. So it's your morals. What do you see as being ethical or not ethical and such stuff? So it's not a thing that you can just develop straight away like that. It takes time, and it's going to take it's not going to come from one source either. I mean, people have different views on things, and the Bible's full of truths, and you can go through it and fill yourself up. And it's not going to happen just like that. It's going to take time. So the next point, it's an excellence and a kindness. So it is hard to achieve. It's not easy to be show goodness to somebody at times. It can be hard to put across, especially when someone's really pushing the wrong buttons, Mum. I know it's been hard for my mum to continue with her virtues and keeping her strongholds correct when I've been pushing her button. And at times she's really wanted to just punch my lights out. So, yeah, that's true for probably most of this church, but no. what else have I put? Yeah, it's also, another word is gracious. Being gracious is a part of the goodness. So that links to grace. And what is grace? God's unmerited favour, and Andrew's wife. So again, they're all interlinked with other areas. You've got to expand upon these areas. These fruits of the Spirit can lead on to a whole lot of areas. It's not just that one individual area you need to look at. They cover loads of things. As all three of us can probably admit, we've looked at these areas for at least a day now. Probably, yeah. We've done it for a while. So we were impressed with how much stuff we could have talked about. There's a lot. So it's also excellence. I think I've touched on before, but doing your best to the best of your ability.
making sure that you're putting everything into it. You're not just turning up and thinking, well, I don't really need to do this, I won't bother. And then somebody else having to do everything. We all make a key part of a team. Everyone knows that if you're playing a team, if somebody's not performing, then the rest of the team is affected. I know that if the opening batter gets out, number three is going to go in, and he'll just slog, and he'll get out. That's Whiston for you. But still, it's different this year. We've got a new team. but yeah. Confession as well is a good one. Yeah, make sure you're confessing the right stuff. That's a key part of goodness. And being a good influence to others. So when you're showing goodness, you're going to be an influence on others. They're going to see what you're doing and think, actually, that was a really brave thing to do, or a different thing to do, or something that I wish I had done. And then they might adopt that. And again, that's developing their virtues and their beliefs and eventually their attitudes to life. So it's very important. Now, I've done this point, and Jonathan will carry on, but at the end, I've just come up with an idea, so we'll come back to that. Okay?
Okay. Right, we have hopefully clarified in your minds what each of the fruits truly is, not what you just think they are. What I'd just like us to do is just to take a few minutes, just on our own. You know, we don't want to know any of this, but just write it down for yourself to see. In the last few weeks, few months, how many of these fruits have you seen coming out of your life? How many points can you say, I could see myself using patience. I could just take a few minutes. I think that'd be good, just to look at ourselves, just for a minute, and just see. Are we using them? Are the fruits of the Spirit coming out of us? So if you, I mean, just I don't know whether you want to write them down, just for yourself. Nobody else wants to know. Take a few minutes.
Or at least which areas you need to improve upon. So, areas to focus.
I hope you've all had just enough time. Just have it, just to think. You know, just a little bit longer. Okay. Hopefully you've all managed to... I would hope everybody's managed to write almost most of them. I mean, we all slip up, but I mean, things, if you haven't seen some of them coming out, I mean, just think why. I mean, you might have not had the opportunity, you know, to, and you might refresh in your mind. I'm sure most of them have used the fruits of the Spirit, all of them at some point, but perhaps you should need to sit back and think, why? You know, have I not had the opportunity? Can I not remember? Or is it something deeper than that? So, without God, a person cannot give out of the true fruits of the Spirit. You know, non-Christians can be kind, loving, but there's not a depth to that comes with that relationship with God that brings out these fruits of the Spirit. I mean, like Daniel said, all the fruits are so closely linked together. You know, they're just different sides of the same coin, realistically. If you look at them all truthfully, they're just different aspects of... Yeah, it's that relationship that comes with being in God's Word. Not knowing it, not be it, somebody can repeat God's Word off by heart. I mean, there's certain scriptures that stick in my mind, but it's that having that relationship with God that produces these, and being in the Word. That, I mean, I will admit that I don't spend nearly as much time in the Word that I should. I know I don't. I should spend more. And I know if I did, I would get a greater understanding of the relationship that I should have with God. If a plant isn't sustained, it cannot produce good fruit. If you don't keep feeding that plant, it will stop producing fruit and eventually die. You can't just feed a plant and expect it to continue growing for the rest of its life. You can't just feed it once. If a plant isn't sustained, it cannot produce good fruit. A plant can produce bad fruit. A plant can grow rotten fruit on its own branches. Linking into confession. Your confession, which comes out of your mouth, is determined by your fruits. That's what's inside. That's what your fruits are, what comes inside. And your mouth, your actions, are what shows what's inside. They are the two portals that give people away. If you've got bad fruit coming out, you will show. If there's good fruit inside, it will show. You can't hide. That is one thing you can't hide. I mean, people can dress it up in as much smiling as they want, but it still will not, will not hide what's inside.
If you've got a plant, it produces fruit, and then we inevitably going to eat it. So it's actually a key part of our lives, especially if you're a vegetarian. So in the same way, we're producing fruit, we're giving off fruit, that we're trying to use this fruit of the Spirit to then produce our own fruit that then we give to others. So if our fruit's bad, we're not feeding ourselves with the right things, then what we give to others, and say we got bad fruit, we wouldn't eat it. But if you're giving off bad fruit, then the people around you are going to be affected. And I think the same with who you hang around with, who you associate yourself with. If you associate yourself with a bunch of people that are giving off bad fruit, then it's going to affect you. You're going to listen to what they're saying, their confessions, their attitudes, their actions, and it's inevitably going to pay off, and it's going to rub off on you. Another thing I wanted to say, I think this will pretty much finish off apart from what Jonathan's got to read. When we were at a Jerry Seville conference when I was 14, probably, can't remember. I was quite young. Still am young. This gentleman spoke on the last night, I think it was. And what he did is he got this little pebble. And the whole service was based around this little pebble. And we all got given a little pebble at the end. It was fantastic. I took about 20 pebbles, because they were lovely and shiny. Everybody loved them. But the whole point of this thing was, it went through, my dad's talked before when Moses was in the wilderness, and he talked to the the rock, and the rock gave water. And then the second time, he didn't speak to it, he whacked it instead, which was not what God told him to do. He wasn't listening to what God told him to do. And anyway, this stone was meant to represent that. So you were in a car, you're driving along, you think, oh, he's cut me up, I'm going to give him some right abuse. He chased after me in the car, and then suddenly, he'd hit himself or something, or he'd knock that stone, and suddenly he'd think, actually, when Moses was in the desert and he didn't listen to what God said, and he wasn't doing what God wanted him to do, it had repercussions. And I think that was like a good reminder for him. He had this stone in his pocket, and it always reminded him of that fact. And I think as Christians, we can forget stuff that we can learn it in church 2 or 3 weeks down the line, and people having to say it again. You forget what they've said. It's all right making notes, but everyone knows you have to, at university, you have to read a book at least. You should read it 15 times for it to go in. That's the theory behind it. So, I mean, if it's going to take 15 different messages at 15 different times for a word to go in, how long is that going to take? And I think having little symbols like that is like a brilliant way of trying to remember stuff, that suddenly you'll hit that stone and, oh, that thought has just come, that message has just come back into my head and I remembered exactly what that person said. And I think we could probably try and implement this in our own lives. I mean, I have a bunch of keys. Who else has got a bunch of keys? Loads of people got keys. If you put a little key ring on it with a fruit, that's going to remind you of the fruits of the Spirit. Stuff like that. It's not hard. You've just got to... I mean, this is a learning thing, but it's not really related to it. But trying to remember what you've been taught in church is essential if you're wanting to be an effective Christian. You can't just leave the building and suddenly think, oh, that was good, a good word, and then forget it. You've got to keep reminding yourself. And, I mean, tapes, they're always good to remind you, but I think, yeah, that was an idea that came into my head, that I know Uncle Andrew sells stuff like that, and it's important to remind yourself all the time, and especially to have stuff like that. I thought that was a brilliant way that gentleman got it across to me, especially as a kid when I was really young, and it's evidently stuck in my mind, and I was only young, that if you have stuff like that on your person, it can remind you, and yeah, it can be effective in helping you, and you're like, and keeping your focus in a way, because I know it is hard to keep focus at university. There's things always going on, and you think, actually, oh, I'll go and do that, and I'll go and do this, and then at the end of it, you think, actually, no, that's not very Christian. Actually, if I think about the meaning behind this, I shouldn't really be doing it. And yeah, I think, yeah, that is, it might be a good thing to have stuff like that on you, just to remind you. So yes, I'll let Jonathan carry on.
It was just a final thing. When I got home today, I don't tend to read the word for the day. Mum's always telling me to, and I have to read it, And I must admit, a lot of the time I just don't bother. But today I was really drawn to read it. I don't know why. I just got into my room and I just saw it on my desk, and I just got it and I turned to today's and I just sat and read it. And it really spoke to me. And I mean, it's based around the scripture Joshua 1:17, which is, "Be careful to obey the law." It says, "Notice three things God said to Joshua. Get ready to cross into the land." Henry Ford observes, "Before everything else, get ready as the secret of success. The frustrating thing about preparation is that sometimes it takes you more time than the actual event you're preparing for. There is an old saying, you can claim to be surprised once, after that you're unprepared. Your territory will extend from," that's another saying from Joshua. "You have to know where you're going. You cannot be like Alice through the looking glass, who asked the Cheshire Cat, 'Would you please tell me which way I'm ought to go from here?' Cheshire Cat says, 'That depends on where you want to get,' the cat replies. 'I don't care much where,' she answered. 'Then it doesn't matter which way you go,' the cat responds. People who are undecided cannot draw on their faith or their giftings. As a result, they merely drift along. Author Bill Copeland advises, 'You've removed most of the roadblocks to success when you know the difference between motion and direction. To be successful in your life, you must do the right things, moment by moment, day by day, following through them in a constant way. Third thing was, be careful to obey the law that you may be successful. Identify your spiritual values." This really spoke to me quite a lot. Henry Frederick M.L. stated, "The man who has no inner life is a slave to his surroundings. Our spiritual values are the principles we live by every day. They are the light that guides us. They give stability, structure to our inner world. And when that world is in order, we can navigate our way through everything."
Now we're going to take the offering and sing a song.